Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
Another thing is we can't look through the windows or doors. We don't know what's happening. We can't hear tanks moving within the hospital. We can't hear continuous shooting that we have now. But again, it's totally scary situation.
The Israeli military's raiding Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza, where thousands of Palestinians have sought refuge or medical treatment. Tanks are inside the complex where Israel is holding Palestinian men naked and blindfolded. We'll get the latest. We'll also look at Tuesday's March for Israel in Washington, where leading Democratic and Republican lawmakers shared the stage with the radical Christian Zionist pastor John Hagee, who once said God had, quote, sent Hitler to help Jews reach the promised land.
Israel is the shining city on the hill. Israel says, God says of Israel, Israel is my firstborn son.
Plus, we speak to the journalist Peter Beinart of Jewish Currents and Rabbi Alyssa Wise, part of the newly formed Rabbis for Ceasefire. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israeli ground forces have raided Gaza's largest medical facility, Al-Shifa Hospital, where hundreds of patients are still being treated and thousands have taken shelter. The IDF has been interrogating displaced people and staff. Medical workers were forced to move premature babies and other patients as the hospital was turned into a war zone, sending dangerous dust and debris into the air.
It is a direct targeting of the specialties building. Patients are being evacuated who were evacuated in the first place from the intensive care to the hallways.
On Tuesday, people trapped by Israeli forces in Al-Shifa Hospital dug a mass grave within the hospital compound to bury the dead. Israel's assault on Gaza's collapsed health infrastructure has also targeted Al-Rantisi Children's Hospital, which, like almost all hospitals in Gaza, was forced to shutter and evacuate all patients.
The hospital was besieged by tanks and water. Power and oxygen were cut, and there were various targeting of the hospital, so we were forced to evacuate the hospital, from patients to medical staff, as well as the displaced families that came for protection to reside in the hospital's vicinity and buildings. A lot of patients were carried by their families. The ambulances couldn't reach the hospital. Their relatives carried them and moved out. Other patients were carried by the medical staff. Unfortunately, there were three patients in the intensive care unit who were placed on the only working devices but without oxygen supply. They were left in the ICU.
Al-Rantisi Hospital houses the only pediatric cancer ward. Over 11,300 Palestinians have been killed by Israel since October 7th. The true death toll is likely much higher. Children make up the largest percentage of victims. At least 1.7 million of Gaza's 2.3 million inhabitants have been displaced, many of them now facing heavy rains as fear mounts that flooding could overwhelm the sewage system. This is a displaced Palestinian.
Winter is a nightmare. The situation we're facing right now will be a nightmare. In the past, I used to wish for winter to arrive and for the rain to fall, for the trees to start to bloom and grow so that we can harvest, when everything looks very beautiful. But right now, I pray every day for it not to rain. We are living in tents, nothing that protects us. When the rain falls, we will drown.
While the rain brought misery to now homeless Gazans, some also welcomed the downpours for finally providing drinkable water. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed at least 8 Palestinians Tuesday, 7 of them during a 15-hour military raid in the northern city of Tulkarm. The Tabet Hospital was attacked with a barrage of tear gas canisters that covered the facility with thick haze. Since October 7th, nearly 200 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli soldiers and settlers in the West Bank. Israel's military Tuesday confirmed the death of a soldier taken hostage by Hamas on October 7th. Hamas released video of the captive 19-year-old Noa Marciano before her death, as well as a photo of her apparently after she was killed, which Hamas blamed on an Israeli airstrike last week. Meanwhile, the families of other Israeli hostages kicked off a 5-day march from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem to demand Prime Minister Netanyahu do more to secure their release. Belize has become the latest nation to suspend diplomatic relations with Israel over its war on Gaza. Meanwhile, the deputy permanent observer for Palestine to the UN responded to recent comments by German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, who said Israel is a democracy that respects international law and human rights. Majid Bamia wrote on social media, quote, "I am now convinced there's another international law that we don't know about and that the German chancellor and others are referring to, one that allows colonization, collective punishment, indiscriminate attacks, wanton destruction, racial discrimination, as long as your name is Israel," he said. Here in the U.S., over 500 political appointees and employees across 40 government agencies sent a letter to President Biden Tuesday to protest his support of Israel's war on Gaza. In Washington, D.C., tens of thousands converged on the National Mall for the March for Israel Tuesday. While some rallygoers condemned the rise of anti-Semitism and called for the release of Israeli hostages, others brandished signs calling for Israel to keep bombing Gaza. Among the high-profile speakers at Tuesday's protest were Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and the Christian fundamentalist House Speaker Mike Johnson.
As Prime Minister Netanyahu says so well, this is a fight between good and evil, between light and darkness, between civilization and barbarism.
CNN political contributor Van Jones took to the stage and called for ending all the horror while branding himself a peace guy, prompting the crowd to start chanting, "No ceasefire." Another speaker at yesterday's rally was far-right pastor John Hagee, a known anti-Semite who once said Hitler was sent by God to exterminate Jewish people. Yemen's Houthi rebels have launched a series of missile and drone attacks against Israel over the last couple of days. The Israeli military said Tuesday it had intercepted a missile near the Red Sea. Meanwhile, in Syria, at least 66 people, including children, were killed and hundreds of others wounded in the last month as Syrian government forces and Russian allies have intensified their bombardments in Idlib and Aleppo. The U.S. House of Representatives passed a short-term funding bill to keep the government open until early 2024, sending the measure to the Senate ahead of Friday's midnight deadline. The bill was approved Tuesday, 336-95, with nearly two-thirds of the votes coming from Democrats. The bill does not include spending cuts or policy changes as demanded by the House Freedom Caucus. New House Speaker Mike Johnson instead appealed to more moderate Republicans and the majority of Democrats. The bill also does not include military funds for Israel and Ukraine. President Biden announced a $6 billion plan as part of the Inflation Reduction Act to reinforce the country's climate resilience, including upgrading water infrastructure, measures to mitigate flood risks, and modernizing the electric grid. The announcement came as the government released its national climate assessment Tuesday.
This assessment shows us in clear scientific terms that climate change is impacting all regions, all sectors of the United States, not just some, all. It shows that communities across America are taking more action than ever to reduce climate risk. It warns that more action is still badly needed.
In related news, the United Nations released its latest report on climate plans of countries around the world. The UN concludes nations are recklessly off track to meet global climate goals, and that even if countries successfully achieve all their current climate pledges, emissions would still rise 9% above 2010 levels. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned, quote, The world is failing to get a grip on the climate crisis. National plans are strikingly misaligned with the science. COP28 must be the place to urgently close the climate ambition gap, he said. Democracy Now! Will be covering the UN Climate Summit in Dubai in December. Human rights groups and Democratic Congress members called for passage of the End Solitary Confinement Act during a virtual rally Tuesday. The federal legislation introduced by Congressmember Cori Bush would prohibit the use of solitary confinement for more than 4 hours and create safe alternatives. Congressmember Adriano Espaillat said, quote, solitary is a form of torture and causes long-lasting irreparable harm to confined individuals, the majority of whom are black and brown. Senator Bernie Sanders held a hearing Tuesday to call for the strengthening of union protections amidst a wave of labor victories and persistent inequality in the United States. Sanders urged Congress to pass the PRO Act, which he introduced earlier this year. United Auto Workers President Sean Fain, fresh off his union's successful strike against the Big Three automakers, called on Congress to step up for the working class. Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, testified on the importance of a living wage for all airline and airport workers.
You have workers who can't make a living wage and are actually sleeping in the gate areas because they are working around the clock, shifts around the clock, and sometimes different jobs at that airport. That makes all of us less safe. They also cannot live near those airports because they are usually in major metropolitan areas and they're having to take transportation, sometimes 3 hours back and forth, so they don't even have time to go home between those shifts. So we've got to raise the standard for all of the workers. It's about safety, it's about security, and it's about basic dignity at work.
But Republican Senator Mark Wayne Mullins delivered the hearing's most stunning moment when he revived an ongoing feud with Teamsters President Sean O'Brien, challenging him to a physical fight.
This is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your
fire
solution every problem?
No, no, sit down.
Oh, you're a clown.
Sit down.
Look at you.
You know, you're a United States senator.
After ordering Senator Mullins to sit down, Senator Sanders added, quote, God knows the American people have enough contempt for Congress. Let's not make it worse. And in San Francisco, President Biden's meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping on the sidelines of APEC, that's the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit. It's Xi's first visit to the United States in 6 years. Ahead of the meeting, Biden told reporters he hopes to reduce heightened tensions between the two countries.
To get back on a normal course of corresponding, being able to pick up a phone and talk to one another if there's a crisis, being able to make sure our military still have contact with one another.
As the APEC summit got underway this week, an array of protests took over San Francisco streets, ranging from the war on Gaza, the climate crisis, and the treatment of the Uyghur community in China. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin the show in Gaza, where Israel's conducting a military raid on Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza, where thousands of Palestinians have sought refuge or medical treatment. The Palestinian Authority has decried the raid as a violation of international law. There are reports Israeli troops have ordered all young men on the hospital grounds to surrender. Many Palestinian men are already being interrogated, some while being held naked and blindfolded. Israel's accused Hamas of placing a command center below Al-Shifa, but Hamas and hospital officials have denied the claim. Israeli tanks are now inside the hospital complex. This is Dr. Ahmed Al-Mokalati, a plastic surgeon at Al-Shifa.
The other thing is we can't look through the windows or doors. We don't know what's happening. We can hear tanks moving within the hospital. We can hear continuous shooting that we have now. But again, it's totally scary situation.
So what are these sounds, doctor? I'm hearing sounds.
It's continuous shooting from the tanks. We don't know what to do. We are within the building. Each one within the building they are in. We can't move between the hospital buildings at all, for sure. So we are with each other, with the patients, with the civilians within the hospital. It's totally scary situation.
Doctors in Al-Shifa are struggling to keep patients alive, including dozens of premature babies amidst a lack of fuel and the ongoing Israeli military raid.
I'm standing here at the ICU at Al-Shifa Medical Complex. The department is suffering after the shutdown of electricity due to the lack of fuel. The health ministry warned about the lack of the fuel. This department today at dawn was struck directly by the Israeli occupation forces. Here also, the ICU and these children, who were on life machines and artificial respiration, were taken into the corridors of the ICU department. These people here were denied life support devices. They face the loss of their lives because there are no support machines or artificial respiration devices. Around 29 patients are facing this tragedy.
We're joined now by Dr. Mads Gilbert, Norwegian physician who's worked in Al-Shifa for years, just spent weeks in Cairo trying his best to get into Gaza. He's a professor at University Hospital of North Norway and the Arctic University of Norway, who's worked with Palestinians since 1981, was in Gaza there during the major Israeli bombardments of 2006, 2009, 2012, and 2014. Dr. Gilbert, where are you right now?
Right now, I arrived this early morning in Johannesburg in South Africa. I will be on an invited speaking tour here on Gaza and Palestine.
We just have a few minutes, but I know that you've been speaking to people within Gaza, in Al-Shifa. Can you talk about the scene that we just described? What do you understand is happening there?
If I should choose today between hell and Shifa, I would choose hell. I got a report yesterday from the Minister of Health that 20 out of the 23 ICU patients had died. 17 other patients died because of lack of supplies, oxygen, and water. And three, if not five, of the 38 premature newborns have died because of this slow suffocation that Israeli occupation army is exposing all the hospitals by cutting electricity, oxygen, and medical supplies. And it's beyond description. I'm out of words to describe this systematic man-made slaughtering of patients in civilian hospitals. And when I heard the crowd in the United States shout, no ceasefire, I think that's the only place on earth where people are supporting Israel. And the other streets of the world are supporting a ceasefire, a human solution, a lift of the siege, and a support for the people of Gaza. So this is a deeply divided world, and the lies are flying around like never before in any war. And I think we need to keep our heads and our hearts calm now and understand that what we are seeing is an unprecedented attack on a civilian society occupied by one of the most brutal and ruthless armies in the world, exercising a systematic attack on civilian healthcare completely against international law and the standards that we want to apply, and being backpedaled all the time by the U.S. president. I mean, we're in the darkest time of modern history now. So far, if you look at the U.N. numbers, that are coming out every day in their fact sheets, 40,000 Palestinians have been killed or are missing under the rubble or have been injured for 4 weeks. 40,000, 6,000 of the killed and missing are children. When did that become defense of a country? When did it become decent to drag neonates out of their incubators and kill children? You know, the only explanation for this is a deep-rooted and very frightening racism, because you don't do these things to people you consider your equal. I'm extremely disturbed. I'm extremely upset. And I blame the European leaders and your president for this bloody bloodshed of people who are being completely defenseless. And I talked to a colleague in Mustafa al-Aqsa in the south yesterday. He told me they were seeing influx of patients coming walking from the north, having followed the Israeli command to leave the north, and they were being shot in the legs, and they were treating gunshots in the legs from people trying to escape the north. 40%
Dr. Gilbert, Dr. Gibbard, I wanted to ask you what the Israeli government continues to insist that Hamas is using the hospitals in Gaza as command centers and as underground headquarters of storing weapons and even hostages. What is your response to these claims?
Twofold. Why are you in the media conveying these false claims continuously and taking the attention away from what is the real problem, namely the continuous bombing and killing of people in Gaza? There is absolutely no proof so far that I know of, neither from U.S. intelligence nor from the Israeli intelligence, and we've heard these accusations for 16 years. Show us the proof. Show us the evidence. And don't forget that the Geneva Convention, the fourth convention, is telling the fighting parties to make both distinction and precaution. If it's a mixed military and civilian target, the civilian precaution takes priority over the military gain. And they have been bombing not only Shifa and Al-Quds, but lots of hospitals, with even bothering to claim that there is any military activity in that hospital. They bombed the Turkish, they bombed Rantisi Pediatric Hospital, and we all seen these ridiculous videos where they say, oh, here are Pampers in a pediatric hospital, it's got to be the terrorists. So I think this is a big sham, and I'm a bit worried that you in the media are so easily are conveying these unsubstantiated accusations. And regardless, they don't have the right to bomb hospitals. That's very clear. And now it's not only Shifa. Now the Al-Quds Hospital is being evacuated with all the patients and all the staff. And it is really a convoy of shame to the Western world and the United States to see these hospitals, the last resorts in a dramatic assault on the civilian population in Gaza, who have done nothing wrong other than being born Palestinians in Gaza. And this convoy of misery is the result of a lenient attitude to the Israeli violations of international law through many, many years. The Israeli impunity has reached a new level, and we are all sinking into that abyss of disregard for human life and humanity as we are seeing this going on without anybody trying to stop the Israeli army.
Dr. Mads Gilbert, we thank you for being with us. Norwegian physician who spent decades working in Gaza attempted to get in to go back to Al-Shifa, but wasn't able to. Now speaking to us from Johannesburg, South Africa. Coming up, Peter Beinart, editor-at-large of Jewish Currents.
Cold-hearted and devious, greedy, mischievous, global colonial, bloodthirsty, blind, mindless and cheap, focused on borders and slaughter and sheep, burning our books, bulldozing of homes, given to targeted killing with drones, lethal injections, arrest without trial, monocular vision, gangrene and slime, unction, sarcasm.
Part of Me Died by Roger Waters. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. In Israel, family members of some of the 240 hostages being held by Hamas have begun a five-day march from Tel Aviv to Benjamin Netanyahu's home in Jerusalem, where they plan to arrive Saturday. The family members are accusing the prime minister of not doing enough to free their loved ones. On Monday, Hamas offered to release up to 70 women and children hostages in exchange for a five-day ceasefire and the release of 275 Palestinian women and children prisoners being held in Israeli jails. Israel has ignored the offer so far and has rejected all calls for a ceasefire. Meanwhile, tens of thousands of people gathered in Washington, D.C. for a March for Israel, where speakers and rallygoers repeatedly voiced opposition to a ceasefire. To talk more about the overall situation, we're joined by Peter Beinart, editor-at-large of Jewish Currents, professor of journalism and political science at the Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at CUNY, the City University of New York. He also writes a newsletter on Substack called The Beinart Notebook. Peter, welcome back to Democracy Now! I want to start with President Biden saying there's about to be a hostage release. And if you can talk about what this deal you see, you can't possibly know exactly what we're talking about here. But the issue of a trade for these hostages for prisoners and who these prisoners are that Hamas is demanding be released.
I don't know the details, but I pray that this will happen. Many of the hostage families have been calling for this. I can't even imagine the agony of these families, not knowing where their relatives are and if they're alive or dead. We, in our own family, we have all the names of the hostages on our refrigerator door, so we see them every day. There are Palestinians who have been in prison, often for a long time, sometimes in administrative detention, without any due process. And it seems to me that allowing women and children, Palestinian women and children who have been held under those conditions as part of a negotiated deal would be a humane gesture on both sides.
And can you talk about some of the leaders who are imprisoned by Israel right now, like, for example, Marwan Barghouti?
Right. So I think one of the problems in Palestinian politics is that there's a whole generation of leaders, really, who are in jail. Most famously, Marwan Barghouti, the nationalist leader. He's not an Islamist like Hamas. Polling consistently shows he's the most popular Palestinian leader. And I think Israel needs to think about what its political strategy is here. You cannot destroy—you can't defeat Hamas militarily, because even if you depose it in Gaza, you will be laying the seeds for the next group of people who will be fighting Israel. We know that Hamas recruits from the families of people that Israel has killed. You need, it seems to me, to support Palestinian leaders who offer a vision of ethical resistance. Not that what we saw on October 7th, but ethical resistance and a path to Palestinian freedom that also means safety for Israeli Jews. Marwan Barghouti, although he was involved in armed attacks during the Second Intifada, has spoken from jail about the path of Nelson Mandela, about reconciliation, about justice, not vengeance. If Israel wanted legitimate Palestinian leaders that it could work with to build a horizon for Palestinian freedom, because only Palestinian freedom in the long run will ensure Israeli Jewish safety, then it could let him out and create the beginnings of a more legitimate Palestinian leadership rather than Mahmoud Abbas, who's viewed as a corrupt, authoritarian subcontractor of Israel at this point.
And Peter, I'm wondering if your response to the way that many pro-Palestinian voices are being silenced in the United States. Last week, for instance, Columbia University suspended Students for Justice in Palestine and Jewish Voices for Peace as official student groups through the end of the term. And your sense of what the impact of these kinds of policies and the pressures from a lot of university donors on their universities to silence these voices.
I think when historians look back at the periods of repression of free speech in the United States, from World War I to the Red Scare of the McCarthy era to the post 9/11 era, tragically, we are writing another chapter now, and it's being done in part because of the cowardice of university administrators and others, people who were sworn to defend the principles of free speech and academic freedom, because of pressure, as you say, very, very often from donors. You don't have to agree with everything that Students for Justice in Palestine says. I myself don't, but they have the right to make their voices heard. Yes, do some of the things they say, are some of the things upsetting to some Jewish students? Yes, some of the things that the pro-Israel groups on campus say are upsetting to some of the Palestinian students. The point of a university is that people are able to express their views. And for goodness sakes, one of the things we've been hearing from people on the right for years and years in their opposition to cancel culture is that universities are supposed to make you uncomfortable. Physical safety is one thing. Intellectual discomfort is another. It is not the job of university presidents to protect students from hearing things that, because they were raised in pro-Israel families, they find deeply upsetting. The point is to allow people to have these conversations. And it's really deeply, deeply disturbing to me that in these places that are supposed to be bastions of free speech and academic freedom, we're seeing this kind of crumbling.
Yeah, and I'm wondering also, there was a report in the New York Times today, which inexplicably, in my view, should have been on the front page, but was buried in the back, about an attack on the Al-Shifa hospital on Friday that initially the Israeli defense forces claimed was, again, errant missiles of Hamas. But the New York Times has been able to document that from some of the fragments